Welcome to All About Books on NET Radio. I'm your host, Pat Leach, Director of Lincoln City Libraries. Today, I'm pleased to welcome a guest to All About Books, Professor Emeritus Robert Stock. Professor Stock is retired from UNL, where he was a professor of English literature. Professor Stock is well known for his expertise in Gothic and horror literature and film, and in what is known as Weird Lit. Professor Stock, welcome to All About Books.
Thank you very much for having me.
How did your interest in Gothic and horror literature develop?
Well, I think like most fans of that type of literature, I came to it as a teenager, 15 or 16 years of age. I started reading H.P. Lovecraft and other more contemporary horror writers. Why is hard to say. You can ask why one person is more interested in baseball and another person in football or soccer. Mm-hmm. You know, who can say, really? I was just drawn to the subject for a variety of reasons. As I went into college and prepared myself to be a very proper professor of 17th and 18th century literature, I kind of abandoned my interest in the Gothic, kind of feeling embarrassed about it, that it was, you know, it wasn't really top-notch literature the way Shakespeare, Alexander Pope, William Wordsworth, these folk that I was studying in college were. But then after I got my degree and got my job here and so on, I relaxed a bit and started getting back into this literature that I enjoyed as much as the, quote, more serious literature that I was teaching. And as it turned out, in the last half of my career as a teacher, I was able to include some works like Frankenstein and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, some of the classic horror works, and, of course, in the English novel or British novel. So that was fun to get back to it.
Well, absolutely. And, of course, this being the season of perhaps some Gothic and horror stories, how would you define that genre?
Horror literature tends to focus on the dark aspects of human experience. Death is obviously one, but grieving, despair, these would be elements often found in Gothic literature. Scenes of horror, not only murder, but even violent sexual acts and so on, these often appear in Gothic novels. A person who is not into this subject might well wonder why a human would be interested in these what would seem to be unpleasant aspects of human life. And I don't know that I have an easy answer for it, but I'd like to spend a few minutes pointing out that this interest in horror seems to be wired into us as far back as we can look. I mean, Greek tragedy in the 500 BCs focuses on death, destruction, unusual sexual acts. These were not presented directly on the stage by the Greeks, but they were certainly talked a lot about in the plays themselves. Especially in plays like those tragedies of Euripides, why were people then attracted to that? It was a major form of literature of the time. It just seems to be built in. And the Romans followed up the Greeks. They adapted Greek tragedy and made it even more horrible, even more gruesome in their accounts of things. For example, in Oedipus, it just gouges out his eyes when he sees the horrible things that he's done in the Greek play, and the Romans have him scrabbling in his eye sockets, pulling out the entrails of the eyes and stomping on the eyeballs and so on. Why would they do that? Well, this is an audience that enjoyed seeing real human beings being killed in the gladiatorial games, well presented by a fairly recent movie called Gladiator. So what I'm suggesting here is this interest in unpleasant or dark subjects seems to go back to our earliest literature. But I want to zoom up now to the Renaissance period and pause briefly with Shakespearean drama. Shakespeare's play Hamlet has all of the Gothic stuff in it. It's dark. It's set in a castle. It involves a ghost. It even involves a ghost that may not be a ghost but a demon. So one of the ideas of Gothic literature is there's a kind of indefinable nature or ambiguity about what's going on, and we find that in the play Hamlet itself. Of course, the corpses pile up by the end of that play. Shakespeare gives Hamlet one of his most beautiful speeches or soliloquies, the to be or not to be speech, which involves, in fact, isn't death preferable to life, and wouldn't suicide be a good thing to do? That's what Hamlet is thinking about in that wonderfully beautiful speech. So that play in the Elizabethan period really is a prototype of the Gothic novel and Gothic horror that more clearly emerges in the 18th century. A kind of an amateur writer named Horace Walpole published a short novel called The Castle of Otranto. It has all the Gothic stuff there, ghosts, enormous helmets coming down from the sky, crushing people, and so on, unusual sexual practices, the whole bit. By modern standards, it's awkward and amateurish. It's hard for a modern reader to take it seriously. But it was immensely popular at the time, 1765, when it was published, which suggests that it was meeting some kind of need or desire in the audience. So that spawned a whole genre of Gothic novel in the later 18th century. Anne Radcliffe, one of the most important women writers of the 18th century, wrote many of these Gothic novels, a beautiful prose stylist. But one characteristic of her Gothic novels is that although you have these themes of dread, doom, menace, and so on, and apparent ghosts, everything is explained at the end of these novels rationally.
I see.
In other words, a wandering figure that might be taken for a ghost or a demon turns out to be a kind of demented hermit living in a cave, you know, or something like that. In other words, a human being, not really anything explicitly supernatural. Those were immensely popular. But at the end of the 18th century, the most important Gothic novel, in my opinion, appeared by a young man named Matthew Lewis, published at the age of 20. It's called The Monk. It's readily available in paperback today. It does have blatantly supernatural scenes. It has a woman who is, in fact, a demon. It has incest, items like that that are part of the Gothic experience. It's an amazing novel. It was obviously intended as a shocking commentary on Anne Radcliffe's novels, because in Lewis, everything is released, as you might expect from a late teenage author. Everything is given full vent in that novel, and it too was very popular. Moving into the 19th century, you have three early 19th century authors, one an English woman and two American writers. The English woman is Mary Shelley, who wrote the famous novel Frankenstein. Frankenstein is usually considered the first science fiction novel because you have a scientist named Frankenstein whose goal is by scientific means to create a human being, with the idea of benefiting mankind by showing us how humans are put together and how illnesses can be treated. Of course, it backfires on him. The creature that he creates turns bad and destructive, perhaps not through his own fault, but through the bad treatment of humans beings, but nonetheless, he does turn bad. So it is a true science fiction novel, and it has a major science fiction theme in it, but it's also a horror novel. It comes out of the Gothic novel tradition. Mary Shelley has many scenes in the forest, gloomy scenes. Frankenstein is a key novel in the history of Gothicism, so that's one. The other two, Edgar Allan Poe, of course, in America, perhaps most famous short story, Fall of the House of Usher, which is pure horror. It involves decay, degeneration. Roderick Usher, the main character, is dying. He's a super sensitive person. There's a delicacy of feeling about him that's intriguing, and yet he's diseased in some major way. Why, we don't know. Biological or heredity, we don't know. The story doesn't really get into that. The story is concerned with producing the effect or the impact on the reader of some of these Gothic themes, decay, death, degeneration, and so on. And the other author would be Nathaniel Hawthorne, a bit later in the 19th century. Hawthorne gives more of a moral edge to his stories than does Poe. My example from him would be Young Goodman Brown. It's set in the Puritan age, just like his novel Scarlet Letter is, but it involves a very young, kind of innocent Puritan minister who ventures out into the forest and sees a witch's sabbat or a witch's religious ritual going on, where many of the townsfolk, many of the people who go to his church in town, are practicing their witch beliefs. And of course, he's terribly disillusioned by this, comes back, is never the same again, you might say, by the end of the story. That story falls in the Gothic tradition because it does describe witchcraft, a witch's sabbat, and so on. But the moral of the story is that this innocent young minister should understand more deeply the nature of evil. He's kind of an idealist, thinking all of his parishioners are very moral, upright people, and this shock of recognition, if I can use that phrase, that there is human evil, not only unsettles him, but causes him gravely to question his faith. So then one last thing I'll just mention here. We're in the Halloween season, and in recent times, Halloween has been a time for looking at some of these Gothic themes in an almost, you might say, festive way. There are Halloween parties and so on.
Right.
If you go back to the 19th century, though, Halloween wasn't such a big deal, especially in England. Christmas was a time when, in fact, many ghost stories were published by journalists of the time. I think at first it seems a bit odd, but I think the idea was that Christmas is also a time of wonder, of spirituality, and so on. And these Victorian or 19th century stories published in Christmas, usually, like Hawthorne and mentioning earlier, did have, you might say, an edifying purpose to them. Now, by any standards, the most famous story in that tradition is Charles Dickens's Christmas Carol, which remains and been made into endless movies.
Yeah.
That story, if you actually read the story or see a good production of it, does include strong Gothic elements. Marley's ghost at the beginning of the story is horrible, covered with padlocks and chains, and terrifies Scrooge because the Marley says, you're going to go down the same path I'm going down, and it's not a good one. You don't want to do this. So it's a very shocking, very upsetting passage. And then later on in the story, you have the three Christmas, Father Christmases, come along, past, present, and future. And the future one isn't so good either. The future one emphasizes Scrooge's death, the snide and uncharitable comments that people make about Scrooge after he's died because he's led such a terrible life. And he sees his own tombstone, one of the big Gothic images. A person dreams that he sees his own grave and his own tombstone. And yet, of course, as people know, Scrooge is converted to joy and love for humankind, the Christmas spirit, as a result of dread. So that's the thing I'd like to wind up my opening comment with. Why be interested in horror and so on? Horror can sometimes, ironically it might seem, produce good things in people. That Scrooge, if you will, is scared into goodness. But so what? He does become good at the end if he's scared into it. That's what was necessary to bring an old curmudgeon-like Scrooge around. So that's kind of my brief intro on that.
On how all of this got started. Mm-hmm. What books or authors do you recommend to somebody today who's new to Gothic or horror literature?
Well, I think I mentioned Dean Koontz, and he's written many novels as well as short stories. Very popular, very accessible author. Mm-hmm. Koontz does have a belief in the value of spirituality. I have no idea if he's religious or if he is what religion he has, but he feels that the spiritual domain in human life is very important and very enriching. Now, he comes through it, presents it often through horror and dread and so on, but his later novels, the Odd Thomas novels and so on, are finally refreshing. They're uplifting. They show that even though a spiritual life can have its dark side, its downs, as well as its positive aspects, that this is a part of human nature that should be recognized, and as an author, he has chosen to explore it. Stephen King tends to be more in the straight horror category, although he's a very talented writer, obviously immensely prolific. I mean, he's clearly the king of horror writing in the 20th century. There's going to be no question about that. And some of his novels are really very good. They have intricate characters and situations.
I'm curious to know in what other areas you read for recreation.
Well, you know, about the same time that I became interested in horror fiction as a teenager, I also became interested in neoclassical poetry. I read Alexander Pope's translation of the Iliad and the Odyssey in rhymed couplets, heroic couplets they're called, and loved it. I read Samuel Johnson's works. He wrote in the later 18th century. He's most famous for having compiled the first complete English dictionary, but he also wrote poems and essays and a short novel called Rasselas, which I enjoyed. Not really horror at all, but more in the, kind of falls in the area of wisdom literature concerned about the meaning of life and what we hope to get out of life and so on. And it was that at the time, again, as a 16 to 20-year-old college student, it was that which I considered the respectable literature.
Okay.
And that's what
mm-hmm.
I specialized in college, and I was hired here at UNL as a scholar of 17th and 18th century literature. And I still read it. I still enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. That's what you pick up to read?
Often,
mm-hmm.
when
Absolutely.
I'm not picking up Dean Koontz or someone like that.
My guest today has been Professor Robert Stock. You can find his book list and recommended films on the All About Books webpage. Professor Stock, thank you so much for joining me today.
I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to All About Books on NET Radio. Podcasts of this and other programs are available online. Visit netnebraska.org/radio. For All About Books, I'm Pat Leach.